welcome everybody to the last in this series of an audio conference training on safety and accountability audits for grantees of the Office on Violence Against Women. My name is Casey McGee, and I'll be your host for today's call. And today, again, in our last call, we'll hear from Jane Sadesky about conducting audit focus groups, a core piece of the audit process. A couple of housekeeping details. I know you've all heard these before, but just as a quick reminder, I'm going to leave the lines open during the presentation. If you do have background noise in your office, you can help us out by pressing star 6 on your keypad to mute yourself, and then star 6 when you'd like to speak. Otherwise, if I do hear background noise, that's fine, and I'll just mute the lines. I'll mute them later. When you're speaking, please remember to say your name and the state you're calling from. And lastly, as a reminder, we do take these calls, and we make them available for $8 a CD, and the order form will be available for download from our website sometime very soon, as soon as the series is over. So, Jane, would you like to go ahead and start?
All right. Well, welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. Focus groups happens to be one of my favorite subjects, partly because I really enjoy doing them. I find it a fascinating and very useful way of learning from people about what's going on and what their experiences are and the kind of guidance that they can provide to the safety and accountability audit as well as in other settings. So I'm going to be drawing on that experience as we talk about organizing, conducting, and using that information, again, primarily in the context of safety and accountability audits, since that's what you're all involved with and all interested in. And I thought I'd tell you ahead of time, I have this some comments kind of organized in three different areas. And so I'll say a few things, again, drawing on that experience, and then open it up for questions after each segment, so that if, for example, you have some particular questions about organizing and putting together focus groups, think about what those questions are, and there'll be an opportunity to ask those after we talk a bit about organizing. Then the second segment will be more specific to conducting focus groups.
It's Jeff Gray from Milwaukee.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
And we'll go on then to talk about conducting focus groups, and again, an opportunity for questions. And then finally, how do you use this information? What purpose, how is it going to help inform different stages of your safety and accountability audit? And so with that, I'm going to say a few things first about putting this all together. And safety the focus groups are really a type of interview. And those of you who have been through one of the audit coordinator trainings know that we spent a fair amount of time talking about the importance of interviews as a way of learning from people about many aspects of institutional process. Focus groups are a key kind of interview to learn from people about their lives and their experiences. And there's a couple of key types that we use during a safety audit, one being what we're calling community focus groups, and that would be with folks who are the focus of our institutional intervention. So, for example, victims of battering. Number of focus groups with battered women would be a key piece of who you'd want to talk with if you're looking at some aspect of case processing involving domestic violence and battering. There are also practitioner interviews that can be conducted with folks who are working in the system. And that might be, for example, say you're in perhaps a jurisdiction with a number of probation officers or people who are assigned to conduct some type of pre-sentence investigation or pretrial release review. And in addition to observing the work that they do and some kinds of one-on-one interviews about their work practices, that might also be a setting where you want to bring them together. Or if there's a number of If your project straddles different law enforcement jurisdictions, you might do a focus group with officers from the sheriff's department, this law enforcement agency, that law enforcement agency. It's going to vary depending on your question, the scope of your audit. And you can also use those practitioner focus groups kind of towards the end of things to help sound out and report back, well, this is what we think we're seeing and hearing and learning. How does this square with your experience working in this particular point in our response, whether it's looking at perhaps a focus group with advocates on experiences around orders for protection. In one of the supervised visitation projects that we've worked with under the visitation technical assistance, we did a number of focus groups with community-based advocates. This was a larger metropolitan area. There were several advocacy organizations working with different communities, different geographic regions. So as part of the safety audit, brought a group of advocates together and talked with them about women's experiences in learning about and finding out about and connecting with supervised visitation and other aspects related to what's going on post-separation. So a couple of different kinds of focus groups. Although most of what I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is more particular to the community-based focus group. Frankly, I think those are more challenging often to put together, to find people, to figure out how that's going to work, than some of the practitioner focus groups. But don't be shy if you've got questions about, well, how might we talk with someone from 911, or how are we going to, if you are doing a safety audit, for instance, in North Dakota, you're covering several jurisdictions, if I remember correctly, and perhaps you've got questions on how to put that together. So don't be shy with the question. And in terms of organizing focus groups, when you have an opportunity to look at the handouts or if you have those in front of you, we've got a couple of things that are particularly helpful in that planning stage. One is an actual worksheet from the Safety Audit Toolkit about planning focus groups that provides some questions in key aspects of that planning. How you're going to account for safety, what kind of recruitment process you're going to use, working out compensation, stipends, support for transportation and child care, some of the logistical details that can sometimes trip you up, as well as who's going to do the facilitating. So you'll see in that handout a series of questions that if you went through that and answered all those questions, you'd have a pretty solid plan and early implementation piece for a focus group project. Some other kind of tips of the trade from working with a number of communities and a number of projects are lead time. The more generous your lead time can be in putting this together, the more that's going to contribute to being able to put together the numbers of groups, the types of groups, where you want to hear from people, and be able to build that with the least amount of frustration and knuckle biting that can go along with it. And it's really key, I think, to, again, think about focus groups as a key way of people teaching us about their lives and their experiences as they're being drawn up into whatever aspect of legal systems or other institutions we're taking a look at. And not to come at it with kind of this, oh, let's just get this over with. Kind of a bother, we know we need to do it, but we'd really rather not do it. But to really be genuinely curious about what people can tell you about how things are working in your community. Now, that comes with a couple of caveats and cautions about certain limitations of focus groups, and that is that you are hearing from who's in front of you, and sometimes that reflects already how well connected people are with different intervening systems, whether it's the battered women's shelter or the victim witness person at the DA's office, or however you made that connection to do the recruitment. So one of the reasons it's important to do more than one, and wherever possible, I think, especially kind of at that front end of a safety audit, being able to do, you know, at least 3 to 5 is great, because then you get more of a pool from which to draw on. You get a better mix of experience. You have an opportunity to also try to connect with people who may be outside of that case processing. So, for example, if you're looking at police response, you certainly want to hear from battered women who have been drawn into police response. Either they've called the police, they've turned to that point of intervention as a way to get help. You also want to hear from women who are really reluctant and don't want to get involved in being contact with the police, and finding out more about why isn't this major response related to safety that we've got in place. That is, you call 911 and there's an officer who responds with certain authority. Why for women with this experience or this particular community, why do they not want to use that? Because that can help shape our understanding of what needs to change in terms of safety. So that's a caution to kind of carry through this. Talked a bit about this lead time. And whenever possible, to try to do this, you can do focus groups throughout the whole process of your safety audit. And there are different things that you can accomplish at those different points. Early on, it can really help shape the scope and the nature of your question. What do we want to find out more about? How can talking with women who have experienced the 911 response, or who have partners who are in a batterer intervention program, how can learning from them kind of more up front help us shape what our question and scope is going to be, but also suggest kind of who we should talk with and where we should look. And any time that you do a focus group, to always end with that, well, what should we take a look at? It's make sure that you really sum up what that advice is. Here's what we're thinking of. Here's what we've heard from you. Now, we want to make sure we know, what do you think? What are the key questions? Who should we be talking with? What should we be looking at? All of that kind of framework for your information gathering, your data collection, if you will, focus groups can really contribute to that in a big way. And one of the things that now in working with communities for probably stretching on now to close to 8 years in different kinds of safety audits, that I've come to realize is that to some extent with community focus groups, that organization can be in part a reflection of how well kind of where the audit has its home, kind of the audit agency, the public face of the audit, how well that entity is connected in the community can sometimes influence how readily you can connect with and find and recruit participants. Because sometimes that willingness to take time out to spend 2 or 3 hours to get to a place to talk about parts of our lives that can be very difficult and a mix of emotion, be angry, can be fearful. Sharing that kind of detail about our lives is asking a lot of people. And oftentimes, it's who asks you to do that makes a big difference in willingness to participate in the focus group. So a certain credibility and link between, if you're the audit agency, audit coordinator, who do you need to be talking with in your community to connect with people you want to hear from in your focus group? For example, one of the projects that I've worked on in Wisconsin, which was not a safety audit-related project, but it was a statewide series of focus groups, and then also some focus groups projects in my own community. In one instance, the most successful group we had were by connecting with a couple of social workers who work in the Department of Health Social Services for the county, but who were involved in neighborhood-based programs where they were working in all different parts of the county. They met weekly with groups of women. They had an extraordinary credibility with women. And in kind of sounding this out, that's who we brought in and we invited to participate. We compensated them as facilitators as well as the participants and worked alongside to be able to conduct the focus groups in that way. And those were the most successful out of that whole project in terms of participation and engagement and the kind of information that came out of them. So that's one of the things to be asking as you're thinking about how do we organize this, is who do we want to hear from? How are we going to find who we want to hear from? And who else in the community do we need to be making a connection with to do this? So it can also be that opportunity to build and strengthen those connections. Another example, and again, this is an example of a statewide project, but I think it also works on a local level as well, is in wanting to hear, this was a focus group project that looked at underserved and culturally distinct communities in Wisconsin and their experiences with domestic violence and institutional public response. And that was put together recruiting facilitators from different communities, holding focus groups in local settings, and working to be able to tie the focus group process and build relationships with, on a broader basis, with diverse communities in the state than had existed before. So it became very interconnected and intertwined, and that can work as well on a local level in the context of a safety audit, as well as in this example I gave, this more of a state level. I think, Casey, this would be a good point to stop and see if anyone has any specific questions here about some of the organizing logistics before we move on to talk about conducting groups.
I agree. The lines are open.
Curious if anyone's out there kind of having a little frustration these days with, how do we find people, or how many do we do? Any of those kinds of questions, if you have them.
Will you be talking more about how it is that you figure out who you want to talk to, or do you want to kind of see if people have questions about that now? Or have something.
Well, if no one has any questions now, I'll say a couple things about that, and then we'll kind of move on to talking about conducting them. So we were just commenting earlier that we're all kind of up in the air. We're kind of quiet these days. A lot going on.
Yeah.
Well, in thinking about who you want to talk with, part of it probably feels a little bit of, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Do we do focus group and then define the scope and our audit question, or do we start fleshing out the audit question and scope and then go looking for focus group? And at the risk of seeming a little wishy-washy here, there's not necessarily one answer to that. And to a degree, that realistically is going to be rolling on in kind of a simultaneous sort of way. I think most folks going into applying for a grant have a general idea that of where they want to apply their audit. So my hunch is most of you know we're either going to look at some aspect of law enforcement response or some aspect related to prosecution, or sentencing practices, or perhaps I think one or two of the communities we've had contact with are looking at doing a safety audit in conjunction with supervised visitation questions and processes. So you have a general idea of who you're wanting to talk with. And then it's, okay, well, we want to hear from victims of battering who are drawn up. We want to make sure as much as possible that we're hearing from a good representation of who's in our community, so that part of that connection might come from traditional advocacy organizations like the shelter. It might also come from making connections with public health nurses. I think actually that whole avenue of some of public health services or the WIC program, the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition, kind of thinking about different varieties and settings where battered women may be in contact with people who they're talking with or can provide information to make that connection. So it's thinking a bit about where those connections might be. And then using a variety of ways of recruiting people. Word of mouth with a connection through a credible person is probably, in the end, the most successful. But you can also look at using flyers, thinking about where you want to post those. Is there a public health clinic that works with, that provides well baby checkups on a routine basis? That might be a place to post a flyer. Having enough lead time then to build in a process for hearing back. Okay, if you're interested in the focus group, you have a postcard you can send back, and we will contact you. Call this number or let so-and-so know. There's a variety of strategies for that, and part of that's going to depend on, again, who you need to hear from and how you need to make that kind of connection. And we've provided a few materials at this point for the purpose of this audio conference call, but there are other things that if you are in the process of putting together focus groups that we can also provide, ranging from samples of flyers that different communities have used to questions, an idea of how to shape the questions that you want to get the discussion started with, and some of those kinds of things. So I'm going to say a few things now about the actual conducting of. But before I do that, again, we've got this planning sheet here, and I would encourage you, if you're at that stage of putting things together, to take a look at this, because this is going to kind of cue some things in your thinking about putting this together. For example, under logistics, really thinking about the safety concerns. Is this a space that has a certain location that either has a plus or minus points to it in terms of safety concerns and privacy? Sometimes a public library can be a great space to do it. In other communities, that may, you know, people may not be very comfortable or familiar with using that setting. So some of these real practicalities of how do you get there, what kind of public transit is there, maybe there isn't, rides, parking, providing some kind of on-site information, advocacy kind of connection, because sometimes that can be really important for participants, and not wanting to limit where that connection is important, but focus groups that either we've done in connection with some of the Praxis trainings or communities I've worked with, the two kinds of focus groups that have tended to be the most difficult for participants, where they've really needed and appreciated a more immediate connection than afterwards to kind of talk about what's going on and make some links to support and advocacy, has been with battered women who have been arrested and with women around child custody actions, particularly if they've lost custody. So another piece of this is thinking about who and how are you going to connect participants with that kind of support if that's something that they need. So that one handout has kind of the key areas of planning that you'll want to consider. And we've also included a focus group checklist, which is an adaptation from a book that deals in great, great detail with conducting focus groups. But again, to provide a set of cues there to help think about how to recruit and prepare and put this together. So we'll say a few things about conducting focus groups and then see if you have any questions. And one of the things that, again, carrying into this whole way of doing an interview is that reminder that it's a conversation with someone. Not talking to them, it's a conversation with someone who is going to teach you. Not an interrogation about the particulars of their life or a particular incident. I had an experience a few years back with finding, oh my, somebody went through this training and then went and did these focus groups, but it's sort of almost police investigator-like interrogation of women about their experiences being battered. So it's coming into the room with that fundamental respect. I'm here to learn from this group about how things are working in our community and not working. And to have in place parameters and reminders for confidentiality, that what the discussion is around the table, it's not to be carried outside of the room. And to lay all that out, one of the other handouts that you have is a set of facilitators' cues, and it's kind of the background that you would be using to set the stage for the discussion. And that includes everything from introducing the facilitator, whether that's you or whoever is going to be doing that, note taker, if there's someone who is providing interpretation, that person will have a very key role in explaining and perhaps interpreting for you, because I think ideally facilitation should take place in people's first language. And explaining the project, explaining the process for collecting compensation, why you're here, what this is about. So you'll see a whole set of kind of reminders of setting the stage for the conversation that's going to take place. And I think one thing I'd like to mention, too, because I know this often comes up at some point, is I think it's really, really important that community members receive compensation for their time and their expertise and their contribution to this. And that can vary. Cash, I think, would be the preferred because that gives people the most flexibility. But depending upon what you have available and how you set up the resources to do this, it might be a gift card, it might be a gas card, it might be cash. It should be, again, generous enough to acknowledge the significance of that contribution. So something in the range of $35, $50, $75. Communities that we've worked with recently have kind of been in that range. And food. Never underestimate the appeal and the role that food can play in just relaxing folks and making it easier to be there, particularly if it's something at the end of the day. So, again, these are on these checklists and the planning thing, but some key things to keep in mind. Part of the conducting, too, is figuring out ahead of time who's going to be facilitating. And that may be you as the audit coordinator, because that's oftentimes a role that you find yourself in. It may be that there's someone from a community organization who you have contact with who you think would really be a better facilitator because there's some credibility and trust there that you can build on. So be thinking about that question of who should facilitate and what would be the best mix here to accomplish the conversation that we want to have. And probably above any advice that we could give in this would be to just be prepared for anything. If you are going to ask people for their permission to record the focus group, and that's fine with everyone, then make sure you have the equipment to do that. I've done both, and I've actually kind of now gravitated away from futzing around with tape recording equipment. First of all, I think it can be really off-putting to a lot of people. Most of us aren't real keen on having a microphone to record things. Sometimes that's fine. But it became more of a, now you have to go back and listen to all of it again. And the reality of having the time to do that is pretty limiting. So what's worked in more recent focus group projects has been to have somebody who's pretty good with a keyboard and a laptop and who can just kind of sit off in the back and follow and take a set of notes as the discussion is taking place. And that's, again, it's become a bit of my sort of personal preference for how to put the notes together. Because then it can be pretty quick to go back in when you've finished a focus group to check in with the facilitator and the note taker. What do we think were the key points here, key themes? Was there any part that we really want to make sure we think about in going back and putting this together, so you can kind of make that record of it pretty quickly. But again, that be prepared for anything. Be prepared for you're expecting maybe 6 people to show up, maybe 12 show up, maybe 3 show up. Sometimes only one person shows up. That's obviously not a focus group, but you can still have a meaningful interview and conversation and add that into the mix of other information that you're gathering from different focus groups. And be prepared for people showing up with children when you didn't expect it. There's just a lot of little wrinkles that require maximum flexibility and having somebody available to kind of help as a backup from a logistical point of view. And in terms of asking questions, again, part of that's going to be dependent on what you're wanting to take a look at. And you don't need to come in with a set of 10 or 12 or long laundry list of questions. In fact, I think that can be fairly limiting in getting the discussion going, because then you're more focused on your list of questions than on hearing back. And you want to ask a lot of how does this work? How did you experience? Describe for me what happened when you went to apply for a protection order. Kind of walk me through that. So for instance, you might go around the table and ask each participant to give a description of what it was like to first walk up to that clerk's office or wherever they had to go to get what they needed to file a protection order. And so you don't need a lot of questions, but you have to have in mind some key things that you want to learn and structure a few questions that reflect that. So I'm going to give you a couple examples here of different focus groups that did. I just kind of grabbed a couple of them as I was getting ready for this. And again, if you're going to be planning a series of focus groups and you want a bit more technical assistance on shaping what you want that discussion to look like, we can talk with you more about that. But here's one example, and this comes out of some of the visitation center work that we did. And this happened to be in a large community, but starting with some kind of general question or icebreaker, not necessarily jumping right into tell me everything about your life that's been going on, or tell me about the last time you were arrested. You may want to get to those questions, but so starting with some kind of more general icebreaker, and there's a variety of things. It can be what's your favorite chocolate to what part of the city do you live in? You're doing covering a larger geography, or some childhood memory or favorite toy, or there's a variety of things, and I'm sure you can think of some ways of getting that going pretty readily. So in this case, we started with this because we were drawing from such a wide geographic region. The icebreaker was to kind of get someone's name, the general area of the city they live in, and how they came to live in the city. Some folks were born there, others moved there. It was a way to get people used to hearing their voices and talking a bit around the table. And then on this list of questions that we brought to the focus group, we only had kind of 3 key questions that we wanted to find out about. And one was, kind of the first big one was, people find out about this center in different ways. I'm going to list some of those ways, and if this applies to you, raise your hand. You can raise it more than once. So we started this focus group with a little survey, which is a very good approach. And this the survey was where you referred to it by a court to this specific center, were you referred by to any visitation center of your choice, picked from a list that someone gave you. So you can use those kinds of surveys, ranges, if you were perhaps talking with battered women about their experiences with 911, you might say, think back and how many times in the last year have you called 911 because you were scared or being hurt? And you say, less than 5, more than 3, or just take numbers around the table. So some kind of survey related to what you want to find out about. And then we went on to ask participants to describe their very first impression with the center. And we were wanting to find out how much information did they come in with and what was confusing about what would happen. What did they understand clearly? So we started with that first impression and then went out to what more of that more in-depth experience was as they came back to the center for visits or exchanges. And our last question for this group was, if we put you in charge of the center, how would you design it? What would you want to be here? And that's kind of a variation on this kind of summing up question of what should we be thinking about? What should we be looking for? Although this was a very concrete kind of wanting to know, okay, this is what we'd want it to look like, smell like, hear when we come through the door, pictures we want to see on the wall, getting at that kind of detail. So you can use a variety of techniques like that, asking questions. How many of you have had the police come to your house in response to a 911 call? And then explore that. Was that because they made the call? Was it a third party? Were they looking for the police to come? What happened when the officer came to the door? Getting into that more concrete understanding of what experiences it's been. You can also use scenarios. You can construct a scenario and present it and say, here's the experience of Jane Smith. Now, when you read this, what do you think she should do here? What do you think she'd really do about this? So keeping in mind that sort of more creative grab bag of approaches for asking questions and getting the discussion going. And I'm thinking, Casey, this might be a good spot to see if anyone has any questions.
Yep, I agree. The lines are still open.
Has anyone started doing focus groups as part of their safety audit? Anyone who's on the line? Are you all in the kind of early planning, thinking about stage? The pondering stage. as I said earlier, they are a lot of fun, and they can also be pretty challenging.
Hey, this is Jeff in Milwaukee.
Yes, Jeff. Hi.
Hi. I had a real quick question. With you had mentioned some kind of gratuity or some kind of stipend or gift certificate or something along those lines.
Right.
Is there a proper etiquette of when to do that and how to do that? I assume that's something that's done after everything's completed rather than soliciting people to participate?
Well, in the recruitment, you would say, and in recognition of your time, there will be a stipend of, you know, and we will provide transportation or child care. So it's clear people going into it know that this is available.
Okay.
And then because sometimes folks can kind of pop in at different times to, in the introduction, you would say, we're going to talk from 5:30 until 7, and then we'll wrap up, and then we'll settle up with, we have a stipend or a gift card for everyone. And a lot of times it's nice to have that in an envelope ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
so then you're not the facilitator and note taker, whoever is kind of managing it, isn't fumbling around with stuff. They can just provide that envelope to someone. I've worked on many projects where someone has wanted a receipt for what's been paid. And there are some real simple ways of doing that that don't get into people having to provide a lot of personal detail or identification or anything like that. You have a very simple, just kind of the page printed with the date of the focus group, the topic, and just lines, you know, where somebody can leave their initials and then the amount that they check off. You know, they've received this $50 payment, or I received this gift card plus reimbursement for transportation. Realizing that oftentimes the county or city or whoever you're working with really wants to know that you didn't walk off with their $1,000 that they gave to conduct a series of focus groups. So there's ways of kind of putting that together pretty stress-free. Okay, anything else before kind of move into phase three here?
Hello, this is Julie Christensen from North Dakota, and I have a question about we're going to be doing some focus groups with battered women who use the visitation,
mm-hmm.
And those who didn't use the visitation, but all of them had a protection order. What do you think about combining the ones who did use the visitation with the ones who don't? We are kind of wondering, you know, what's the whole process of finding out that there is the visitation center? How did that decision get made about whether or not to use it? Things like that.
Well, if you can, I think it would be good to have different groups, if that's at all workable, because...
Mm-hmm.
You may go down very different paths with both of them and find it a little tricky to learn as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if the reality is that we can't kind of figure that out ahead of time,
right.
then in the course of facilitating, you probably want to kind of alternate things a bit. So you don't have one, you know, these three or four women here feeling like they're never going to get to say something.
Right.
And so, for instance, you might, if you know four women, you find out, use the visitation center.
Mm-hmm.
The question to them would be, how did you find out about it?
Okay.
So you'll hear from them, my lawyer told me, or I had a friend who used it, or find out how they learned about it. And with the other women, you say, now, I know you didn't use the center, but did you ever hear about it?
Okay.
Did you get any information about that it existed? And then you might want to take a couple, you know, if someone says, well, yeah, I heard about it, then you'd want to know a little bit more about, well, did you ever make a contact with them? You know, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of follow that a little bit.
Okay.
And so it'll take some facilitation to make
right.
sure that you're not leaving one group kind of sitting silent and not mm-hmm. being able to contribute to the conversation, but also accomplishing what you'd like to learn there.
Right. I was kind of thinking along your lines, but then someone mentioned that we might get some good interaction between the two groups, so those that used and didn't, too.
Well, that's true, and that's why I think you, either direction, you will have very useful information.
Okay.
I'm trying to think here. We did some of the focus groups. And this might be something as you put this together, if you want to have a phone conversation about some of the focus groups that we did around visitation, we could do that.
Okay.
If that would be helpful.
One
thing, for example, I'll give you one example. I realize I do have the questions that we used in one community where they were trying to find out something similar, looking at experiences of women who had used the center, but then they also did a focus group in a transitional living housing complex to find out what kind of information women in that setting had about the visitation center, and actually discovered that they had very little information, period, about many of the legal aspects related to divorce and custody and post-separation. But with, for example, the group who didn't use the center, you might ask them, you know, if there was a protective, monitored kind of way for your children's father to spend time with them, what would that look like? What would you want it to include? And then you could get that kind of interaction most likely from women who had used the center. We could say, oh, well, yeah, this is what was here, or, boy, that was a good idea, but it's not in place at this center. So you can get that kind of exchange going back and forth. So I think it will work either way. It depends in part, too, on how just the logistics of getting women together and if you're going to have a better, more dynamic group, certainly.
Well, and have you also had a focus group with the batterers who have used like a center or something like that?
Yes, the demonstration site did that, and particularly in Chicago, those centers were really able to draw in comments and questions, but all of three of the demonstration sites have done that as well. To find out about what fathers' expectations were coming in, what kind of information they had, what they expected. If you were in charge of designing the center, what would it look like? That, I think, is a really good question in exploring supervised visitation and exchange, because so much of what's been constructed up to this point has been around and takes place in some kind of space. But that would also be good information.
Well, thank you.
I want to say just a few things before we wrap up with our final questions about how you use this information. Again, it's a kind of interview to find out about people's experiences and to help inform the whole process of a safety and accountability audit. And some of the key things that we get from doing focus groups are it's a way to discover and to begin thinking about that gap that we talk about between people's real, everyday, lived experience and the institutional response to that experience. It's a way to help shape and refine the audit questions. It's a way to check what you're learning, and the findings and assumptions that are being made in the course of the audit. So, for example, towards the end, you might go back. We mentioned doing practitioners groups, use them as kind of a think tank to explore the findings and how this might work in implementing what recommendations you're making, or to come back to a community group and say, well, this is what we learned after we went and we observed this and we read that and we talked with all of these folks, and what do you think? How does this kind of fit with the experiences you've had, and what else should we be thinking about in making recommendations? It helps, and this is a bit kind of related to the gap piece, but it helps clarify how different people experience this practices as helpful or not. Because for some, and this is where you start learning, for some victims of battering in our community, things are working pretty well. This is meeting needs and experience the expectations that they have. For other folks, it's not working well. And there's this disconnect between being heard, being feeling that you're being taken seriously, and that there's a recognition of what's happening in your life and what needs to be there for safety. And then another thing I think that's really emerging as more communities have used this process of inquiry and evaluation and assessment, particularly in their coordinated community response efforts and context, is that focus groups can also then help be a tool for implementation. Going back periodically, bringing people together and finding out, getting a sense, has this change made a difference? We're now providing a connection with advocates, say, at the time of a police call. Checking in 6 or 8 months after that change has been made and beginning to get a sense of, well, our experience is different? Are we hearing different things? This seem to be working. So it can be also factor into some of the implementation work that you want to get underway. And as with all aspects of this way of looking at our work, the purpose in doing a focus group is not to get some agency or catch someone doing something bad. It's to understand how those institutional processes work in a real way in people's lives on a daily basis, and be able to use that to help shape and structure and inform the safety audit work. Let me think here if there's anything else a lot of things we could say about focus groups, but I wanted to mostly kind of get these key areas of thinking about, here's what we need to kind of keep in mind in organizing, here's what to keep in mind in conducting, be thinking about how we might use this information across this, looking at who can we connect with, how can we also use this type of interview in this safety audit context to help build some of those connections in our communities or strengthen the connections. And I think there are probably many other things I could say at this point, but let's see if anyone else has questions before we wrap up.
This is Casey. Mm-hmm. Something, hope we don't mind me throwing some questions your way, but something I know I hear a lot of people ask about as they're getting to the point of planning their focus group, particularly as an audit team, is, you know, you don't want maybe just one person from your audit team hearing what women have to say or what focus group participants have to say. So, for example, if you have a law enforcement officer or a probation officer or a child protection worker on your audit team, do they come to the focus group? And if they do they identify themselves? I mean, people who may potentially be threatening to participants, and how you recommend people handling that while still inviting the whole team into the process somehow.
Right. Well, tended to start at a more maybe back end of that is one way for the team to be involved in the whole process is to get notes or an outline of key themes and an overview from the audit coordinator and ideally facilitator if possible. Say, here's what we learned. We did these groups, and here are our themes that we came out of the focus group process, so that you're always carrying that information with you then through your different steps in analysis and debriefing, where you can check back and say, oh, how is what we've learned now after doing all of this series of observations and interviews, how does that fit with the theme that came out of the focus group? Are we seeing the same things, different things? Does this suggest we want to go find out more information? So almost in a bottom line way, I think it's less important for individual audit team members to actually be at the focus group than it is for the team members to clearly understand what the themes were that emerged from those discussions. So that would be one thing. And then I think it can be very informative for people to hear about real-life experiences of someone who's come through that criminal legal system or civil protection order. I think that needs to be clear to people up front so that if someone's not comfortable with telling that aspect of their life or that story, knowing that this is police officer over here, that there's that leeway not to participate, because the bottom line is it's voluntary. And then a second piece of that would be, if that's okay with folks, that practitioner, their role is to listen. It's not to debate, it's not to argue, it's not to challenge, it's not to say, well, excuse me, but that's not really what our policy is. It's to be there in that observer-listener capacity. And again, you don't want to kind of overwhelm people by having, in that setting, four or five audit team members and then five or six focus group participants. That's really kind of skewed. So it's a lot, I think, also dependent upon really thinking about the community. I know, for instance, in one of the very rural areas that I was involved with as they did their focus group and their project, it was real clear that having other practitioners from the agencies county of 4,000. That was not a good idea. So the focus groups, there were no other practitioners who sat around, who observed the group. And actually the facilitator in that case came from outside of the community. And it was enough kind of reinforcing the confidentiality around the focus group participants, who obviously many of them knew each other, but that would not have been a good mix in that case to have had individual sheriff's deputies or officers there, because the odds are pretty high that they would have been personally involved in someone's call or arrest or action. So some of that's going to depend on what you're looking at, nature of your community, who's on the audit team, and then kind of thinking about how to connect team members in that process. But still, the bottom line is what the team really needs to know is we did five focus groups. We talked with 15, 20, 30 battered women in our community. Here's from that discussion, here are the key themes that came out of that. It could be that no one ever got a call before the plea bargain was reached. We don't know what's happening. Or I ran into him at the grocery store. I never got a call telling me he was being released from jail. So you kind of organize things around those key themes with some examples, because I do think kind of using people's own words and having several good examples of what those themes are is also very useful to the team. That was a good question. Anything else out there? Trying to think of who I talked with recently. I think it might have been Sue Parrott up in Whatcom County, Washington. And they, one of the things I think that has happened, they've now been through a couple of safety audits and are using this approach and become kind of integrated in many ways in their coordinated community response. And one of the things they have kept doing is using focus groups to help kind of check in, explore more particular aspects related to what they've learned in the audits, to then use focus groups to set the stage for other work that they want to do. And I think in some communities that can be one of the kind of products, if you will, almost, of using this safety audit method of inquiry in that coordinated community response setting, is to get some familiarity and with putting focus groups together and doing that, using that kind of technique on a more regular basis. So, I think we're getting down.
Yep, I think we're wrapping up.
Timer clicking out here.
Yep. So, if there aren't more questions or comments about this from folks, I'll just thank everybody for joining us today and for this series. It's been a good series for me. And to remind everybody, please send us your evaluation form. They really do help. And just to remind a bunch of you, in case any of you have team members or other people who you're working with, colleagues who think they'd like to understand the audit process better, we have a series, 5-part series, starting next Tuesday. It's going to cover audit topics in a more introductory way. So it'll start from the very beginning, what is a safety audit? So if you're working with people that are wondering what the heck you all gotten yourselves into, you can go to our website and you can find the registration materials right there. So just know about that. So otherwise, thanks you all for joining us, and give us a call if there's something you've heard in this series that you feel like you'd like to talk about with us in more depth. So thanks so much, Jane, and thanks you all, and we'll talk to you all later.
Yeah, and again, if any of you have more specific questions as you're planning and getting more into your focus groups, connect up with Casey or myself, and we've got sample questions, we've got all sorts of little things we can send your way.
Yeah. Thanks, y'all.
Have a good afternoon.
Bye.
Bye.